It's a website.
Still have that same feeling. Like, what is it? Right. True. All right, Tabosai, good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Yud Zayin. We left off. Last two lines. Test Zayin Amud Beis. So Gemara says, Tabosai, remember again, Gemara made a dramatic statement. That's Rabbi Yehuda, the name of Alavasi, made a dramatic statement that a Obey Tochavim, a non-Jew, betrothed a woman with Zmanazar, you have to be Choshesh for the Kiddushin. You have to suspect that perhaps the Kiddushin was good. Why? Because perhaps this Gentile man is one of the members of the 10 lost tribes. To which the Gemara says, now the Gemara qualified that statement, and the Gemara qualified that statement to only refer to a case where Lemaisa, it was a place where you knew that the 10 lost tribes had once resided. So therefore, again, there's a concern that perhaps this individual is still one of the remnants, and therefore the Kiddushin is good. So the Gemara says, the Amr Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, because Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana said, I will say Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana quotes the Pasuk from Malachim. And the Pasuk says, the first part of the Pasuk is talking about Vayago Melech Ashras Yisrael Ashura. So the king of Ashur, the king of Assyria, who is the one who exiled the 10 tribes, exiled them where? Towards Ashur. Vayan came Bachalchach, or I should say Bachlach, Bechavor, Nahar, Bechavor, Nar Gozen, Va'are Madai. So we'll say these are the names of all the places that Melech Ashur exiled the 10 tribes. And the Gemara qualifies this. The Gemara says, Chalach, what's Chalach? Zechilazon. This is the place known as Chilazon. Chavor, top of Yudzayim, Zu Chadyab. This is the place known as Chadyab. Nar Gozen, Zeginzok. Va'are Madai, Zu Chamdan, Bechavrosel. This refers to Chamdan and its surrounding cities. So we'll say again, Lemaisa, what the Gemara is just doing is the Gemara is giving just contemporary names to these cities that ultimately are mentioned in the Navi. But Amrila, and others say, Zu Nihar v'Chabrosel. So the Gemara, others say, it's Nihar and its surrounding cities. Chabrosem, and Amr Shmuel, Krach Moshri Chitri Bidumikyo. Okay, so we'll say, Shmuel is just giving additional names to these cities that were originally known as the cities that the 10 tribes were exiled to, and therefore further qualifying Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda's, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Ravasi's statement, that if a man from one of these cities is Mekadesh a woman, he has to be choshesh that ultimately, again, he is one of the members of the lost tribes. Am Rabbi Yochanan, Bechulan Lifson, and all of them ultimately, again, are puzzle. Now, why does it not say the majority of them are puzzle? Now, look at Rashi, what does that mean? Lufson. Ruban Mamzerim Shenit Mu'ash. Ruban Mamzerim. The majority of these people, ultimately, again, are Mamzerim. So the Gemara says, why? Rashi says, Shenit Mu'ash Aris Hashatim Ba'ob Dos Kochabim. U'benehen Harihin Ki Yisraelim. V'noik Bohen Isra Mamzerus. V'hein Lo Nisharu. V'nosu Ze'achoso Obito V'harihin Mamzerim. So Rashi points out something, two very interesting things over here. Number one, that apparently, again, there was rampant intermarriage when the 10 lost tribes were exiled. Number two is the fact that apparently there was a loss or a blurring of family lines, to the point that literally you had siblings, which should mean people from the same parents, and Lav Dafka married to each other, ending up marrying one another and ultimately creating problems, further problems of Mamzerus. So Rabbi Yochanan says, although it's true that Lamaisi, you might have to be concerned that they're parts of the members of the 10 tribes, just know that genealogically, it's all messed up. Ki amrisei kamei de Shmuel. When I said this before Shmuel, Amar le Shmuel said, Bincha haba min Yisrael, is karei bincha. Shmuel said that if a non-Jewish man has a child with a Jewish woman, that is called bincha. That is called your son, meaning that child is Jewish. Ve'in bincha haba min ha'ovaydes kochavim, karei bincha. But if a Jewish man has a child with a non-Jewish woman, then Lamayis again, that would be called your child. Now, I will say, she said, that's not your child. That's an Obed Kochavim. The identity of the child is determined by the mother. Now, I will say, the reason why Shmuel is saying this is because Lamayisa, the way the Gemara made it sound, was that the men of the 10 lost tribes married the Gentile women in these various areas. Well, if that's the case, there's no problem of Mamzerus. If that's the case, there's no problem, ultimately, again, of Jews who are just embedded in this general society. They're not Jewish. They're not Jewish. So what exactly is the issue? So the Gemara says, V'ha'ika banos, but one second. It's not just the men who intermarried. Presumably, again, the women of the lost 10 lost tribes also intermarried as well. And therefore, Lemaise, again, those children of a Jewish mother and a Gentile father would be genealogically Jewish, and therefore you would run into the problem. Amravina, Shmamina, Ben Bitcha, Habamina, Ovid Kochavim, Karoi Bincha. Therefore, we see from here that what? That the son of your daughter that comes from a union with a non-Jew is called your son, i.e., that the child of a Jewish woman with a Gentile man is still called a Jew, to which the Gemara still says. So again, so remember, just listen to what's happening over here. This whole conversation got started because Rabbi Yehuda is saying to Rav Asi that if a non-Jewish man is a Kaddish woman, so you have to be Choshesh that he's one of the members of the lost, 10 lost tribes. The Gemara qualifies that. That's not everywhere. That's in certain places where we know that the 10 lost tribes were ultimately exiled. The Gemara says, what does that show you? Now, again, that's strange because Lemaisa, are you telling me then that a Jewish man that has a child with a non-Jewish woman, that child ultimately is Jewish? Because that's the only way you'd run into Mamzerus issues, or you run into potential issues of Gentiles who, or I should say, people who look like Gentiles but are really Jewish. To which the Gemara says, no, it's not just the man, it's also the woman intermarried, and therefore, again, the offspring of that union would be Jewish. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why that didn't happen. The Gemara says, Gemiri, we have a tradition, the Bansa Dahudara, it's Daruye Itzdara. Well, so that's actually a very profound statement. We have a tradition that the women of that generation, meaning the women of the 10 tribes who were exiled, were barren. Now, why were they barren? I will say, look at Rashi. It's actually quite a dramatic statement. The Gemara says, hey, look at Rashi, Dahudara, Da'asaras HaShvatim, Itzdaruye Itzdaru. Nivka Rahman Meliklot Zera. Literally, their womb was unable to receive seed. V'na'asu Akaros. They were barren. It's through Lashon Bikua. Tila Harifi Dimatizeka. Kumot Sire Dechiti. So, what's interesting for the Gemara seems to be saying is that the exile of the 10 tribes was so traumatic that the women did not conceive after being exiled. How the Gemara how this tradition came about, they don't know. But this was the tradition. So both sides, what that tells you is what? That Lemaisa, at least for that first generation, there were no children that were conceived by the Jewish women. And therefore the children that were conceived were a result of who? Of the Jewish men who married non-Jewish women. Now both sides, remember, this whole Gemara only gets off the ground with two assumptions. Number one, that you could create an issue of a Jewish child with a Jewish man who's with a non-Jewish woman. And number two, that the union of a Jewish man and Jewish woman produces a mamzer. And we'll say, now those are two premises that we reject. We don't halacha accept either of those. A child of a Jewish man and Jewish woman is a non-Jewish man or a non-Jewish woman is not a mamzer. I'm sorry, let me say that again. The product of a Jewish woman with a non-Jewish man is not a mamzer. That child is a bona fide Jew. The only issue that sometimes comes up is if it's a girl, her ability to go ahead and marry a kohen. That's an interesting discussion in halacha. But the child is a bona fide Jew, and we accept the idea that if a Jewish man has a child with a non-Jewish woman, that child is not Jewish. Therefore, la halacha, the concern of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rav Asi is not really a legitimate halachic concern. If a Gentile man were to go ahead and be mekadesh a woman, even in one of these 10 tribe areas, we would not be choshesh for the kiddushin. But the Gemara is still going with the assumption, according to the opinion, that it would create a problem. Ikud Amri, others have a different approach. Ki Amri Seikami the Shmuel, when I said this in front of the Shmuel, Amar Lei Lo Zazu Misham. So they did not get up from there until Shmuel conclusively proved that these individuals in these areas are to be treated like bona fide Gentiles. They're absolute Gentiles. Because the Pasuk says, Bashem Bagadu Kibanim Zorim Yaladu. Literally, the pasuk says in Hosea, referring to the 10 tribes, they rebelled against God, and they gave birth ultimately again to foreign or to alien children. So the pasuk itself indicates that Lamaisa, the 10 tribes, unfortunately totally assimilated and lost their Jewish identity. So we'll say, therefore, again, so Shmuel essentially disproves the concern of Rabbi Yehuda and Nimra Vasi. Yosef, Rabbi Yosef, Achorid Rav Kahana. Rabbi Yosef was sitting behind Rav Kahana. The Yosef Rav Kahana kamed Rabbi Yehuda, and Rav Kahana was sitting in front of Rabbi Yehuda. The Yosef Vikamar, and he was sitting and saying the following: Asidin Yisrael, the of the Yomatava, ki charvi Tarmut. The Jewish people will make a Yomtiv when the city of Tarmut is destroyed. I will say, and I remember, go look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says over here, Yomatava, Mishum Demamzerim Heim, or Mitamim the Yisrael Apostle and Osan. So we already saw this referenced yesterday, that the city of Tarmut was filled with Mamzerim. And apparently what often happened was is that these Mamzerim went ahead and often married into the general population without divulging their true genealogy. And of course, again, that creates incredible, incredible problems for the general genealogy of Klal Yisrael. So therefore, again, Rav Kahana said before Rabbi Yehuda, that it'll be a Yomtiv when the city of Tarmut is destroyed. So the Gemara says, V'ha Charit, but one second, Tarmut was destroyed. So apparently at some point in time, Tamud was already destroyed, to which the Gemara says, no, Hahi Tamud, that was Tamud that was destroyed, Tamud is still standing. So the Gemara says, Rab Ashi Amar, Hainu Tamud, Hainu Tamud. Rav Ashi says, no, you're both wrong. The truth is, Tamud and Tamud are actually the same place. So what's the issue? Achpuli hu de michpo. Look at Rashi. Achpuli ichpo, kishachara mikan, michpola v'nivnis mikan. So apparently, for whatever reason or whoever it was by, Talmud was destroyed many times. And whenever it was destroyed on one side, they would go ahead and rebuild it on the other side. Chorev mehai gisa, if this side of the city was destroyed. Osef mehai gisa, they would rebuild the other city. Ve'icharev mehai gisa, if this side was destroyed. Osef mehai gisa, they would rebuild the other side of the city. Okay. Yosef Rav Hamnuna kamei du'ula. So say another very interesting case or story. Rav Hamnuna was sitting before Ula. V'kahavi b'shmaita. And Rav Hamnuna was challenging the teachings of Ula. He was challenging him. Rashi says, V'kahavi maksha. He was asking good kashas. Amar ma gavra u'ma gavra. Ula said, what a man, what a man. Meaning, again, Ula was saying that Rav Hamnuna was such a great Talmud Chacham. What an incredible individual. Ilav dar panya me'asie. It were not for the fact that you came from Harpanya. I must say, remember again, we saw Harpanya. Look at Rashi. Ilav dar panya me'asie. See, he's a she'inam yuchasim. But remember again, Harpanya, we saw in yesterday's daf, also had a proliferation of mamzerim within their midst. So I must say, so you have Ula marveling at the great knowledge of this young man, Rav Hamnuna. And he said, oh, what a wonderful guy. But you know what? Nebuch, he comes from Harpanya. Ichsif, Rav Hamnuna got very embarrassed. Obviously, again, because remember, Rav Hamnuna also, when you make a statement like that, what that also does is it casts dispersions on his lineage. Right? Because if you come from a place where ultimately, again, there are so many mamzerim, so obviously that casts a shadow on your own yichus. So Rav Hamnuna got very embarrassed. Amar Leih, so I will say, so interestingly enough, here's what's fascinating. You know, the Gemara says that there are two telltale signs of Mamzerus. Two telltale signs of Mamzerus. What are the two telltale signs of Mamzerus? Number one, anger. Kas. People who have terrible kas, the Gemara says, you better check your family tree, because it's quite possible that there is Mamzerus somewhere within the family. And number two, an absolute lack of embarrassment. That someone who has no embarrassment, someone who will do anything and everything and does not care what people think, does not care what people say, has absolutely just no like inner inhibitions, no shame. Shame is the better word. No shame. Those two things. And by the way, you actually don't have to possess both. The Gemara says either or. If a person has terrible kas or a person has a lack of shame, that ultimately, again, is indicative of Mamzerus. So what's interesting over here is that what Ula picked up on is that when Ula made this statement about Rav Hamnuna coming from Har Panya, so Rav Hamnuna got embarrassed. So he picked up on this and he realized that there's something special about this individual. So he said to him, tell me, Kesef Kalgalta Lehechli Yavis. It's interesting. Where do you pay your taxes to? Kesef Kalgalta literally means a head tax. Right? I mean, where do you pay your taxes to? Amarle le Pumnara. He said, I pay my taxes to the municipality of Pumnara. Amarle, to which Ula said, Imkein mi Pumnara. If that's the case, then Lamaisi, you're not really from Har Panya. Because if you're from Har Panya, you'd be paying, maybe you live on the outskirts, like you live right over the Har Panya Pumnara city line. So Lamaisi, again, you don't live right within the city. Obviously, you must live in a different locale, different vicinity. Therefore, you're counted as a resident of Pumnara and not a resident of Har Panya. Okay? Amar Rav Zera, where does the name Har Panya come from? Har Shakol Poninbo. The mountain that everyone turns towards. Now, also, what does it mean? Look at Rashi. Shakol ponim sham. Kol psulin shein motzin isha ponim v'holchin sham. Anyone who can't find a shidduch because of their less than perfect yichus. So ultimately, where do they go to find the shidduch? Har Panya. Because in Har Panya, what happens? In Har Panya, everybody has broken yichus. So no one's really asking any genealogical questions. So it's the mountain that everyone who has a problem finding a shidduch goes to. B'mas nisatana, we learn. Kol shein makir mishpachto v'shifto nifna l'sham. Now who went to live in Har Panya? People who did not know their family, their background, or their particular shevet. Meaning people who had problems with their yichos ultimately went to settle in Har Panya. Amar Rava, v'hi amuka mishol. So Rava says, and the truth is, Har Panya is even deeper than Sha'ol. We'll say Sha'ol refers to Gehenna. That Har Panya is even worse than Gehenna. Look at Rashi. V'yamuka v'ra'a v'davar zeh yoser me'Gehenna v'ilu liyarde Gehenna ikat akanto d'chsiv miyad sholat dey mimaves agalim v'ilu psili dido less with akanto. Let's listen to this. So the Gemara says that the truth is being a mamzer is even worse than Gehenna. Why? Because Gehenna, the Gemara says that mishpat reshem b'Gehenna yud beis chodesh, that even if a person is a Rasha, the longest I have to serve in Gehenna is for 12 months. There are certain Rishon that are condemned to Gehenna for much longer. But a regular person who might have done terrible things, sin, so a person is that's the longest sentence. But Mamzerus, unfortunately, is a life sentence. And not just a life sentence, but it's a sentence, it's a reality that's passed down to one's heirs as well. So that's what it means when it says that Har Panya is even deeper than the Sheol. Har Panya is even deeper than Gehenna. Shenemar, Miyad Sha'ol Avdeim, Mimava Sagalim, because at least when it comes to Gehenna, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will redeem the sinner from Sha'ol, from Gehenna, I will redeem them from death, V'ilu P'sul Didou, Les Luhu Takanta, V'yet from Amzerus, there is no remedy. So Gemara says, now the Gemara goes on, P'sul Dar Panya, Mimushim P'sul Dimisham. So now the Gemara says over here, so the people, the P'sulim of Har Panya, really originally came from Mishon. Look at Rashi. Mishon psulei de Mishon. Shekrova la umis arvin bahen. Varen parakas aryuchsin Mishon meisava hasav afarish psulei. So what's like, what the Gemara is talking about over here is almost like, I guess for lack of a better term, we'd call it like mamzer migration. Right? So it's, the mamzer, you heard that term here, right? So the mamzerim moved. Also, Efton says, see, we live in a very different, our society is just very, very different as a result of many things. It's a result of 2,000 years of diaspora. It's a result of 2,000 years of persecution. It's a result of a whole variety of things. And it's also a result of general laws of yichus, meaning most people do not really have a firm grasp on their yichus. Right? Most people, again, the person knows maybe 3 generations. Four generations, and certainly again, the Holocaust obviously also took away a lot of this. We'll say that's what we know. The Gemara says when Eliyahu HaNavi comes, it's interesting. What's the first thing that Eliyahu HaNavi is going to do? The first thing is he's going to sort out family lines. Yeah. That interest DNA check. Now, the first thing that is true is the Gemara says there are a lot of people who are not who think they're not Kohanim who are Kohanim. There are a lot of people who think they're Kohanim who are not Kohanim. Interestingly, like one of the things fascinating, the Gemara says one of the things that Eliyahu HaNavi said, that Eliyahu HaNavi is not going to do, is he's not going to point out Mamzerim. The Gemara says that mishpachos shenitmu nitmu, that families that have, so to speak, become blended within Klal Yisrael, that we are not going to go, that Eliyahu HaNavi is not going to go ahead and pick out. I don't know how he's going to work it out, but the point the Gemara is making over here is that Lamaisa, they knew that there were certain cities where Mamzerim, where people with genealogical problems ultimately resided. So the Gemara says, oh, here, where did the Pesulim of Harpanya come from? They came from Mishon, Pesulim de Mishon, Mishon Pesulim de Tarmut. So where the Pesulim of Mishon came from Tarmut, Pesulim de Tarmut, Mishum Abde Shlomo. And I will say this goes back to the beginning. Where did all of this start? All of this started in Tarmut. And who did it start as a result? And we have this in Sunday's Daf. Abde Shlomo. It all started with the slaves, the servants of Shlomo, who them non-Jewish slaves, who were very wealthy, however. They were very wealthy because of the wealth of their master. And they married Jewish women. Now, also remember, this is also reflecting the view that what? That Obed Kochavim Haba Abbas Yisrael, that the offspring ultimately is a mamzer. So it all goes back to Abde Shlomo. V'haylu da'armi inshi, and this is what people mean when they say, Kavar Abba v'kavar Zuta. Min gadar va'azel, right? Excuse me. Min gadar. So the Gemara says, this is what people say when they say kavar abba v'kavar zuta. Whether you have a large measure or a small measure, the Gemara will say that what's saying is when it comes to genealogical unfitness. I don't know if that's the right word, but genealogical problems. Whether it's a big problem or it's a little problem, it's a problem. So the Gemara says va'azel l'shal mishal l'tarmud umi tarmud l'mishan umi mishan l'harpayis. So the Gemara says it again over here that they went from. Literally from Shosh to Sha'ol, from Tarm to Tarmud, Tarmud to Mishan, Mishan to Arpanya. Okay. So the Gemara says, Hajjun Allah, Chamesh Esrei Nashim. So we'll say Shkoyach on finishing the first parak of Maseches Yevamos. Back a little bit to Yevamos. Ketzed Eishes Achiv Shalahay Bomos. So also remember again, the Mishnah actually made reference to this particular case. The Gemara made reference to this particular case. Okay, the truth is I skipped the Rashi in the last paragraph, but it's kind of... Let's just go back. Let me just read those last two lines, because I want to read that last Rashi, and we'll make another scene on the paragraph in just a moment. So the Gemara says again, essentially, kavaraba kavazuta min gader va'azil l'shol. Right? Ultimately, again, small measure, large measure of genealogical unfitness escalates and ultimately takes one down to the shol. Look at Rashi. Kavaraba v'kavazuta eifa gdolo v'eifa ketana. A large measure, a small measure, shnehem me'uvasim. Both of them are broken. Kilomar, kala pesulim miskalgal and biyodon l'shol. All genealogical unfitness ultimately takes one down into Gehenna. It also means that to live with mamzerus is Gehenna. It really is. I mean, it really is a significant Gehenna for the individual. But however, again, mishol l'tarmut, kilomar shesha'ol gavah mitarmut, u miskalgal mishol l'tarmut, b'taymeh kidol el, dil yorda Gehenna v'ika takanta l'psul, bido ein tahara. Min gadar miskalgel. So whether it's a small measure or a large measure of genealogical unfitness, the matter escalates, essentially condemns one to a lifetime of Gehenna. Because even Gehenna, as bad as it is only for a limited duration, but this genealogical unfitness stays with the individual, the olam void. And again, so it puts a person in the Sha'ol, and ultimately again from Sha'ol, Tarmut, Tarmut to Mishon, Mishon Tarpanya. Fine. Mishnah. Ketzer Eishes Achiv Shalahay Bomos. Well, remember, we actually alluded to this case. Not alluded to, this was mentioned in the first Mishnah as well. This is the case of Eishes Achiv, the wife of one's brother, who was not alive at the time that the brother died. So we'll say, so the Gemara says, what's the case? Listen to this. Shnei Achim. There are two brothers. We'll call them Reuben and Shimon. Umeis Echon Mehen. We'll say, so Reuben's married. We'll call Reuben's married to Rachel. So Reuben's married to Rachel. Reuben dies. After Reuben dies, there's another brother that is born to Reuben's parents. Right? So Reuben called Amma, Abba, and Imas, Reuben's parents. Reuben dies. And then afterwards, his parents have another son, Levi. Levi is born after the death of his oldest brother, Reuben. And what happened? V'achar kach, Yibim Hasheni, Es Eish Hazachav. So we'll say, now what happens? So Reuben died. Levi's born. After the birth of Levi, so Shimon does Yibum with his deceased brother Reuben's wife. So Shimon does Yibum with Leah, Reuben's wife. Okay. Umes, and then what happens? Then Shimon dies. So we'll say now when Shimon dies, remember, Shimon leaves behind two wives. Number one is Yibum wife. We'll call her Leah, who was Reuben's original wife. And let's assume for a moment now, Shimon was also married to his own wife. We'll call her Rachel. We'll call her Rachel. So now what happens? So now Shimon dies, and two wives fall to Levi for Yibum. One is Leah, who was originally, again, Reuven's wife, then widowed by Reuven. Then Yibum with Shimon. And wife number two is Rachel, who was Shimon's wife, now widowed by Shimon. What happens? Harishona yotza mishum eshes achiv. So Levi cannot do Yibum with Leah. Right? He can't do Yibum with Leah. Why? Mishum eshes achiv shalah haya ba'olam. Because they both say, as much as Leah was married to Shimon, her original identity is still as what? Is still as Reuven's wife. And you can't do Yibum with the wife of what we'll call a non-contemporary brother. You know, and we'll see in the Gemara why, but there is no Yibum unless, of course, both brothers, the deceased brother and the surviving brother, were alive at the same time. If the surviving brother is born after the deceased brother dies, then there is no Yibum. So we'll say the novelty over here is that although, again, now at this point in time, I would have thought that perhaps Levi should be considered Shimon's brother, and I would have thought that Leah should be considered Shimon's wife, and therefore, again, that Levi is a contemporary brother to Shimon. But since we look at Leah essentially originally as Reuven's wife, and therefore, Lemaisa, when Shimon dies, Levi cannot do Yibum with Leah, who was originally Reuven's wife, because Lemaisa, she is considered to be the spouse of a non-contemporary brother, Vashnia Mishum Sarasa. And he can't do Yibum with Rachel either. Why? Because also you've already established the idea, because whenever you are the co-wife of a woman who can't do Yibum, then by definition what? That excludes you from Yibum as well. So therefore, again, even though technically speaking, Rachel is a valid candidate for Yibum, because she is the co-wife, she is the tzara of Leah, who is excluded from Yibum, ultimately, again, neither do Yibum. Also b'ma'amar, however, also listen to this. What happens? Same case essentially, but in this case over here, Shimon. So same case. Reuven's married to Leah. Reuven dies, and after Reuven's death, Levi is born. Shimon now does ma'amar. So we'll say it's the second time we've seen ma'amar. We have not yet defined it, but we're talking about it. So ma'amar is this type of kiddush. Again, we'll see the process, but ma'amar is this type of kiddush. Remember, Yibum does not require kiddush. Yibum just requires Bia in order to go ahead and affect the relationship. But there is a concept of Ma'amar, which is like a quasi-kiddushin. So what happens, again, if Shimon did Ma'amar? So let's say, again, Shimon did Ma'amar, but did not do actual Yibum. So what if he did Ma'amar, Umeis, and then he died? So what is the halacha? Rashi says over here, Asaba zeshemes Ma'amar, below he speak lekonsa ad shemes. He did not have the opportunity to do full-fledged Yibum before he died. So what is halacha? Now Shimon dies. So let's play this out. Shimon dies. Now two women fall before Levi for Yibum. Right? There is Leah, the wife of Reuven, who did Ma'amar with Shimon but did not do Yibum. And Shimon's own wife Rachel. What's the halacha? Shnia choletes v'lo mesyavemes. Now Levi still can't do Yibum with Leah. Why not? Because she is still the wife of his non-contemporary brother, the widow of his non-contemporary brother. So therefore, no Yibum in that case. Now, interestingly enough, technically speaking, he should be able to do Yibum with Rachel, the wife of Shimon. Why should he be able to do Yibum with Rachel, the wife of Shimon? Because mid-Araisa, Shimon didn't do any Yibum with Leah. So because of that, again, therefore his own widow, Rachel, should not be disqualified from Yibum. But we're going to see Midrabanon, because Ma'amar took place. So Midrabanon, we look at it as if some type of Yibum occurred. And therefore Midrabanon, Levi is disqualified from doing Yibum with Rachel, the wife of Shimon. But we can't say that she's totally free from it, because Midaraisa, she's obligated. So how do we deal with it? We tell him he has to do Chalitza and is not permitted to do Yibum. Okay. So says the Gemara. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said the following. Ma'an detani v'yishon lo mishtabish. So we'll say there are two different versions of the Mishnah. Now they're both commenting on the same case, which is what we'll say. Again, first case in the Mishnah, one more time. Reuven is married to Leah. And what happens? Reuven dies without children. So now his wife falls before Shimon. Now before anything happens, Levi's born. What happens? Shimon does Yibum with Leah, and he's also married to his own wife, Rachel. Shimon dies. Both women now fall before Levi for Yibum. So what happens? Levi obviously can't do Yibum with Leah, the original wife of Reuben, because he's a non-contemporary brother with Reuben. And because he can't do Yibum with Leah, therefore, again, it also disqualifies Rachel. Because what's it? The concept or the principle we established in the first Mishnah, that the co-wife of a woman who can't do Yibum is disqualified from Yibum as well. Now, what's interesting is the following. If you look at our Mishnah, the way our Mishnah stated it was Harishona Yotza Mishum Ish. I'm sorry. So look at Rashi first. Man de Tani Rishona. Man de Karde Rishona Lahach Shanafa Lifne Levi. So we'll say, it what's here? It's interesting. He says, yeah. Okay. The way our Mishnah, let's say it differently. Our Mishnah called Leah, the wife of Reuben, the Rishona. So the Gemara says there's another version. So the Mishnah says that HaRishona Yotzeis Mishum Eishas Achim. The Rishona ultimately is not permitted in Yibum because she is the wife of a non-contemporary brother. There is another version, says Rav Nachman, that says it's the Shnia who can't marry Levi. So the Gemara says each version is correct. How so? Man Tani Rishona, the one who says that it's the Rishona who can't marry Levi, like our Mishnah. So Rishona, Man Tani Rishona Mishtavish, my Rishona, what does Rishona mean? Rishona Linefila. She is the first one ultimately that fell in Yibum. Now we'll say, now why is she the first one that fell in Yibum? Because remember, when Shimon dies, this is already her second Yibum situation. So she is the wife who already had one Yibum. So okay, that makes sense. Uman Tani Shnia. But the version that refers to Levi to Reuben's wife as the Shnia, also lo mishtabish, is also not mistaken. Why? My Shnia, what does Shnia mean? Shnia l'nisuin. She was what? She was the second one married by Shimon. Meaning on both sides, that the assumption was that Shimon was already married to his own wife when his older brother Reuben died. And now in addition to his wife, he married a second wife, i.e. the Yavama. So Mar says, one second, how do you know that? Why can't you just as easily set it up as a situation where Shimon was not married to anyone at the time that his brother Reuben died? He did Yibum with Leah and then afterwards married Rachel. Ella Mai Shnia, rather, what does Shnia mean? Shnia b'nisuin. Rather, what it means is what Shnia b'nisuin. She's what the most look at Rashi. Shnia b'nisuin. Shni says Shnei Panim. Achas l'bava, achas l'yavam. That refers to Leah as the Shnia. Why? Because she's already been married twice. She was married once to Reuben and married ultimately again a second time now to Shimon. So we'll say all the Gemara is pointing out is that there is another girsa to this Mishnah, and you could refer to Leah as either the Rishona or as the Shnia, and both are correct descriptive terms. Fine. Eish, now the Gemara gets into the crux of this halacha. Eish es achiv shalo haya ba'olamo hechaksim. Now we'll say the Mishnah espouses essentially one basic principle, which is that there is no Yibum with the wife of a non-contemporary brother, meaning that if the surviving brother was not yet born at the time that the now deceased brother died, but he was only born after the deceased brother died, there is no Yibum. So Mar says, where do you know that from? Hechok Siva. Amarad, because he's saying, Amarad, the pasuk says, Amarkra, ki eishvu achim yachdom. If brothers, remember the whole pasuk of Yibum says that if brothers go ahead and live together, umeis echad mehem ubein ein lo. So we'll say the parasha of Yibum is introduced with the phrase that when brothers live together, which indicates to us what shahay salahem yeshiva achas ba'olam. It only refers to brothers who are alive at the same time. Prat le'ishes achiv shlo haya ba'olamo. It comes to exclude what? Comes to exclude the wife of a non-contemporary brother from Yibum. So we'll say very simple drasha. Yeshu anosh miyachtav. They have to have yeshiva achas bolam. They have to have lived together at the same time in this world. Okay. So the Gemara goes right then. Yachtav. Furthermore, again, from the word yachtav, we also learn miyuchadim benachala. It has to mean what? That they are miyuchad. Rashi says haruoyin liyoresh zezeh. Yachtav means they're together, which the Gemara also means that they have to be brothers who would inherit one another. The Rabbah said, what does this come to exclude? Prat la'achiv min ha'ein. The Rabbah said, who are the only brothers who inherit each other? Paternal brothers. Maternal brothers do not inherit each other. Only paternal brothers inherit each other. So far we've seen, again, two very important principles. Now, by the way, this paternal brothers is a side point for now, although we'll come back to it. But Lamaisa, what's most important for us is Ki yeshvu achim yachdov, when the brothers will live together, teach us that they have to be contemporaries in order for Yibum to occur. The Gemara goes right there. Rabba Amar, Rabba says, and again, Yachdov also teaches us they have to be paternal brothers. Rabba says, Achim mina av yalik. So Rabba says, well, I could learn out that they have to be paternal brothers from another source. Where do we learn this from? Achva achva ibnei Yaakov. We can learn out the gzer shava of brother from Yaakov. Now we'll say, what's the case? So we're looking at Rashi. Rashi says, achva achva ki yeshvu achim. And shneim asar ben achim ben avinu. So we'll listen to this. So they learn it out over here. It says achim. It says achim by Yibum. And it says achim by the Shvatim. When the Shvatim, this is before Yosef reveals his identity. So the brothers, when talking to Yosef, say, Shneim asar achim b'nei avinu. We are 12 brothers. So just like, again, by the Shvatim, achim means what? Paternal brothers. So too, by Yibum, achim also means paternal brothers. Just like by the Shvatim, they were paternal brothers, but not maternal brothers. I mean, they obviously, some of them were maternal brothers as well. Afkan min ha'av. So too over here, so we'll say, so just like by Achim, by the Shvatim, it means paternal brothers, so too over here, by Yibam, it means paternal brothers as well. Afkam in Avlo Menayim. The Leilif, Achva Achva Me Arayos. So why don't you make a Gzer Shava from Yibam to Arayos? Simorat, we'll also look at Rashi. It says Me Arayos. Ervas Eshes Achicha. The Kamalot Ma Parakabayevim, though. Dafilu Achicha Min Ha'im Velo Menayim. So we'll say, why don't you learn out a Gzer Shava of. It says Achim Bayibum, and it says Ervas Ishes Achicha, that you may not have relations with your brother's wife. And Rabbi Osai, that refers to what? Even a maternal brother. So why don't you say Gzir Shava of Achicha Achim Ach? To teach you that no din of Yibum applies even to a maternal brother. To which the Gemara says, no, Donin Achim Achim, they ain't Donin Achim Achicha. No, because Rabbi Osai, remember, I'd rather make a Gzir Shava of what? Of the word Achim to Achim. And not the word achim to ach. You know, we'll say as much as, again, it's the same shoresh, it's not the same word. In Arayos, it says achicha, not achim. In Yibum, it says achim. So if I could find the same word, achim by Yibum, achim by Bnei Yaakov, that's a much stronger gzeir shava. So I says, well, I might have to mean, why do you think you need the same word for gzeir shava? Hatan de Rishma, we learn, right, the Torah Nishir Rabbi Shma, the shava koinu baka. And Abbas, I said, without getting into this, this is by the case of Saras Habayis. This is the case of where a home contracts Saras. And the Gemara goes in and makes a Gzer Shava between the process of when the coin enters for the first time and the coin returns. And we make a Gzer Shava based on what? Even based on two dissimilar words of the Shava coin, the coin will return to baka and the coin will come. Zoe Shiva, Zoe B, we make a Gzer Shava. So Abbas, what do you see from there? Again, without getting into it, you see from there that you can even make a Gzer Shava. Even with, you don't need identical words for Gzer Shava. Jewish Mara says, you're right. The Gemara says, you're right. You can make a Gzer Shava with dissimilar words, but if you have a choice, but to make a Gzer Shava with what? With similar words versus with dissimilar words, when a similar word, when an identical word exists, we would certainly make a Gzer Shava based on. So we'll say again, therefore, when it comes to Yibum, it says Achim by Yibum, and it says the same exact word Achim by the sons of Yaakov. So therefore, if I have an opportunity to make Gzer Shava with identical words, I will do so. And the Gzer Shava teaches me that the definition of Achim is paternal brothers. Leilev Achva Achva Milot. So why don't you make Gzer Shava ever with Lot? Tichsiv ki anoshim Achim anachnu. Because we will say, what does it say? So Avraham Avinu says to Lot, we are Anoshim Achim. Now, we'll say, remember, Achim, what was the relationship between Lot and Avram? They were uncle and nephew, right? Lot was Avraham Avinu's nephew. So perhaps you can make Gzer Shava and see from here that what? You see that Yibum applies even to a nephew. Torah Samara says, no. Mistabram and Meyakov Havalei Lemelev. It would appear clear that we should learn this out from Meyakov. Why? Mishum Dimithni. As I will say, the truth is, The word achim by the sons of Yaakov is an extra word. Why? Because the pasuk just needed to say the 12 of us are servants, right? The 12 of us, the servants, are all the sons of our father. Uksiv achim. The point of Rosh Hashanah is the Gemara says the word achim in the context of Bnei Yaakov is an absolutely superfluous and extraneous word. Shmamina. Now there are no extra words in the Torah. It must be there. Why? Lafnuye, to leave it open for drasha purposes. And what's the drasha purpose we're going to use it for? To make a gzir shava with Yibum and to teach us that Yibum only applies to who? Paternal brothers. V'itzrich lemichtav achim, v'itzrich lemichtav yachta. So we'll say, so therefore, what comes out is now we have two sources for the concept that what? That Yibum applies to paternal brothers. Ki yeshbu anoshin yachta. So yachta, remember, teaches us that to be contemporary. And Yachdam also teaches us that what? That they share the same father, number one. And number two is Gzer Shabbat Achim Achim. So someone's going to ask, why do I need both sources? Because of Rachmana Achim, if the Torah would have just said Achim, if I would have just heard that from Gzer Shabbat Achim, Hava Amina Leilev Achva Achva Milot, I could have said that Lanaisa, if you're going to make a Gzer Shabbat Achim, I could just as easily make that Gzer Shabbat with Lot and tell you that again, Achim means even nephews. Vechitema Lomitni, and maybe you'll say, that lemaisa, that word is not open for a drasha. Loya, I will tell you, afnuye, it is open. One, if nuye mifne is open for drasha, because it could have just said anoshim reim anachnu. The fact that it said achim, ksin achim shmamina laafnuye, therefore it's open. So I'll say, had it just said achim, I would have made gzir shavat alot, say that yibum even applies to what? Even to nephews. Therefore, the pasuk Yachtov comes to limit it to who? To paternal brothers. Because of Rachman Yachtov, and if Torah would have just said Yachtov, Hava minidim Yachdei ba'ava ube'ima, I would have said, Rabbi, Yachtov means what? They mamish have to be brothers Yachtov, which means what? They share a common father and mother. Therefore, again, Tzricha. Therefore, I need the pasuk of Achim to teach us, no, that it's even just paternal brothers. So the Gemara says, V'ha mehecha, they say. So is that really from here? V'ha mehecha, they say. Yibum benachla tali rachmana. I don't understand why you even need either of these. Yibum is a din rabosai in what? In inheritance. Like it's a whole din in inheritance. Benachla minaav. And rabosai at the end of the day we know that inheritance comes from the father. But lo minaim, and not from the mother. So the Gemara says, itzir sahadai tchanina hoil v'chidushu v'kamishtari erba gabe ema adem yachdei ba'aba v'ima. I would say, rabosai, since Yibum itself is such an incredible chidush, what's the chiddush of Yibum, Rabbosai? That you're taking a relationship that would otherwise be unequivocally usur, right? The sister, the wife of a brother, and you're making it mutter. I might have thought that what the Havamina would be, that only applies to a brother with whom I share a common father and mother. Therefore, again, the pasuk is actually teaching that what? That Lamaisa, it's even just a paternal brother. So Rabbosai, what comes out is that Lamaisa, I actually need both drushes. I need the drush of Yachdov, I need the drush of Achim. Because either drasha by itself would be too weak to yield the conclusion, but both of them together give me the solid bona fide conclusion that what? That Yibum applies to a brother who is only my brother from my father. I will have to stop over here for today. We'll pick up in Eretz Hashem with Amar Rav Huna tomorrow.
A discussion of Shem's word on tomorrow.
Okay, we'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're good. Show me.